The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Thursday, the 28th of January, 2021. On the podcast day, Russ Mould, investment director at stockbroker AJ Bell, talks about the market volatility, shorting shares, and GameStop. Plus, at the end of the podcast, as always, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked, most read RNSs too. You can check out these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll also see lots of other content articles there. There's the Gene Drive and his partnership with Target US and Europe with COVID-19 kit. Gresham House delivers strong growth, full year 20. There's a video, of course, again there, pinned to the side, Capital Markets Summit. It's Paul Hill with the big guys who invest legends of the market there. It's Justin Urquhart-Stewart, Martin Gilbert, David Buick, and Chris Watlin. And don't forget, at the top of the page there, COVID-19 index, biggest rise of the day. Gene Drive, there's an article on that, up, well, up to 78.5 pence, 40%. Biggest faller, Avacta, down 8.5% to 124.5. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, investment director at stockbroker AJ Bell. You're Russ.
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, good health to you as well, I hope, Justin.
Yeah, all good. But you know good. What? I mean, the markets, it's an emotional thing, markets. When you've got money involved, of course, it's always going to tug on your emotions. Mm-hmm. And I see when people start selling, other people start selling, and that makes compounds the problem. But I don't know what the sell-off has started off about. And I'm assuming it's because some hedge funds got a bit burned on the... Is that...
Well, that's one explanation. I mean, more generally, you've markets have had a fantastic run since Pfizer Monday.
Yeah.
You've clearly got some concerns over the vaccine rollout. How quickly is it going to be? Is there enough supply in the short term? And therefore, does that mean that the economy recovers a little bit more slowly than people hoped? And that therefore, any corporate earnings and dividends recover a bit more slowly than hoped? So that's one thing in the background. More specifically, you've then got this situation with GameStop and a number of shorted stocks in America, where there is a suspicion or a fear that some hedge funds have taken a sufficient bath that they're now having to liquidate their long-only positions and their other positions to generate the cash they need to make up their losses and answer their margin calls. And that is provoking, in some cases, you know, people are talking about possible flash crashes if things get out of hand, as selling begets more selling. Hopefully it will come to, I mean, if you really want to paint it black, what happens in the case a hedge fund goes bust and they've gone and their short positions? Well, then their prime broker, an investment bank, actually is on the hook, has to step in, buy the shares in the open market and give them back to the original owner of the shares from whom the hedge fund borrowed them. So you can see how things could
get contagion.
But equally, you know, we've had one down day after a stunning 3 or 6 month run in the markets, and so we probably need to keep a little bit of a sense of perspective in terms of the declines that we've seen in the middle of this week. But it's clearly one of those things that, you know, if you're looking for, you know, we've talked before about what could end the bull run, and it's the liquidity drying up, and that could be lots of secondary issues and primaries, but it could also just be misallocation of capital, you know, people buying the wrong thing at the wrong time for the wrong price. And this is the sort of thing that could potentially be involved in that as well. So it's the sort of thing that will have people on edge for all of the fact, you know, there's clearly a lot of public amusement about how, in some cases, retail investors have taken hedge funds for a bit of a ride.
Yeah, yeah. What I noticed, though, with the markets is generally we over-worry what could happen, and that's why the markets oversell. And then we get over bullish as well, and that's where the market's over buy. So it's always trying to find, it's always correcting yourself this way or that, isn't it? But I looked at the VIX index, and I was saying pretty much 2 or 3 times a year, the VIX relative strength index pops up above 70, which means volatility, sell off basically 2 or 3 times a year. But the fastest pop and biggest rise we've ever had in the VIX was in March 2020. And if you've survived that and you've done better since, then, you know, that's the stock market is part and parcel, isn't it? That's what happens, you know?
It is. I mean, I think one thing that's been intriguing a lot of professional investors, certainly, is why the VIX was relatively high when the stock market was going up. Normally, when you've seen the sort of bull run that we've had, the VIX index will go down to somewhere between 9 and 15. You know, its all-time high is kind of in the 80s, 90s. And it stayed in the 20s, which made people think, well, there's something going on in the background here. And it's actually just popped back into the mid, up about 60% in the last couple of days into the mid-30s. So I think maybe that's the thing, as we argue, a bit of a wobble and a bit of volatility. I think some of it may be because some of the market gains that we've seen has been the short squeeze. Now, I know the Reddit, our Wall Street bet situation has captured a lot of attention, understandably so. But if you look at the most shorted index, Refinitiv do one, Goldman Sachs do one for American stocks, they've actually doubled since November, that index. So the short squeeze situation has been going on for some time. I think it's a professional hit first, other hedge funds on other hedge funds, and retail have been shrewd, spotted it, and in some cases have decided to pile on. But it's actually a phenomenon that you've seen for a bit, and I think it means in some cases, unfortunately, hedge funds have mismanaged their risk, because if you're short of a stock like GameStop stock, where the short positions are more than 100% of the free float,
you
are potentially going to have trouble closing out your position when you need to. And as we all know, you know, when we talk about, people talk about liquidity in markets, right? And just assume that, I mean, a lot of retail investors, particularly if they haven't seen a bear market, well, they've got their platform, they've got their smartphone or their iPad or their desktop or their laptop. They press a button, they hit buy or sell, and the transaction magically takes place. And it's pretty easy to take for granted liquidity. But you and I will remember something as recent as 2008, when FTSE 100 stocks were falling 10% in a day. And could you buy, and liquidity ultimately is not pressing a button. It's, can you buy and sell what you want, when you want, at the time you want, in the price that you want? And it's the price that you want that's the key. And as we just discussed there in 2008, you couldn't. And you couldn't do it in FTSE 100 stocks. So relying on liquidity to be there when you need it most is a bad idea, because it will disappear on you. And that's what the hedge funds have found out with the short squeeze in GameStop, and you're seeing it in BlackBerry and Nokia, and you're seeing it in some UK stocks as well, which we might come back to in a minute, like Pearson. And so the hedge funds couldn't close out their position. They couldn't get out because people who worked out they were short, and they wouldn't sell to them, so they couldn't buy the shares back and close out. And that's how you've seen the share price ramp up. So relying on liquidity, I'll be able to get out when I want to and lock in my profit, I'm afraid to say it just isn't that easy. And when markets start to dislocate, it becomes all the harder. We have seen a little bit of this in the UK. I actually, before we started talking, did some numbers on the 10 most shorted stocks in the UK right now.
Yeah.
And since November the 1st, Premier Oil's up 62, Pearson's up 70, Cineworld's up 182, Metro Bank's up. Now, some of this will be down to, again, Pfizer Monday and the relief, the wave of relief that's up to markets after that. But again, some of it just could be this tickling short squeeze thing, which is a very technical situation for markets. How much does it have to do with the fundamentals of the companies? Have their business model or competitive position fundamentally changed? Is their trading performance fundamentally improved? Have their finances fundamentally improved? I think in the case of all of these names we've mentioned, the answer is probably not. I know that we have a new CEO at Pearson with a new strategy, and I know that the vaccine is raising hopes that people can go back to the cinema and sit in the Cineworld movie theatre again and go back to a Hammerson-owned shopping centre.
Yeah.
But I think in the last 3 months, has there really been that much of a fundamental change? I mean, GameStop, in the end, its sales have shrunk by a third in the last 5 years, and it's been in loss for the last three. And I put out some numbers this morning saying that GameStop is, its market cap is now enough to make it the 30th biggest company in the FTSE 100. And it's got the same market cap as Associated British Foods, which before the pandemic was making £1 billion a year because it owns Primark and British Sugar and Twinings.
So I
think from a valuation perspective, it's very hard to justify where GameStop is now. From liquidity perspective, you can and a technical perspective, you can see how it happens. But then the trick is now, if you've been involved, is how do you get out and lock in your profit, I suppose? That'd be interesting to see how easy that is.
Yeah, well, exactly. Well, the thing is, let's explain it for people. I mean, because it's always an odd, and I've always had, you know, funny high, never shortened the stock. Obviously, you can do it, that kind of thing on the spread betting index, but it's not so good. But so, essentially, GameStop is a store that sells, as far as I'm aware, like games and stuff.
Games and consoles,
old sort of economy. It's not digital. And so it wasn't doing very well. They were going to shut hundreds of stores. They had about 450 stores in America. They're going to shut hundreds of stores. So it wasn't doing very well, but there was a new guy came and had a fondness for it and took a big chunk, apparently, and he's a big Reddit following and all this stuff. And then someone learned that one of the hedge funds had a big short on it. So explain how this works, if you could, Russ.
So what a hedge fund will do, it will do its research incredibly thoroughly, because and then they will decide that they think the shares are going down, and they will look to try and profit from that. So they will go to a pension fund manager, an institutional money manager, and say, can we borrow the shares that you own in GameStop, please? Yeah. And we'll pay you a fee. And if GameStop pays out any dividends in the meantime, we will make good on the dividends. Mm-hmm. The hedge fund then takes those borrowed shares and sells them in the view that the share price is going down. And if all goes according to the hedge fund's master plan and strategy, the shares will go down. The hedge fund will then buy the shares back. So it sold them at one level, bought them back at a lower level. That generates the profit, and it then returns the shares to the original owner minus the cost of the borrow and minus any dividends it's had to pay out to make its profit. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, it has to buy, unless the company goes bankrupt and the shares go to nothing, then the hedge fund at some stage has to buy the shares back to lock in their profits, like the equivalent of somebody buying shares and watching them go up and then having to sell to make a profit. So what you've got here is, in the case of GameStop, you've got this bloke, as you've said, who's got a big stake in the company. Hedge funds between them have then decided the company is sufficiently strategically distressed as a brick-and-mortar retailer of video games consoles that the shares are going to go down. But between them, they've unwittingly ended up shorting more than the available number of shares to buy and trade in the company. So what you've seen some other hedge funds do, I suspect, is say, let's tickle the share price up and find out where their pain threshold is. Because another hedge fund will buy the shares, and therefore they want the shares to go up. They'll just tickle them up a little bit. And the shorter will have a chief risk officer there and a margin clerk there, because often shorting is done on leverage, on margin with borrowed money to goose the returns. And they'll have a point at which the chief risk officer steps in and says, we've got to close this out. We're losing too much money. We're taking too much risk. And what the hedge funds will try and do is find that pressure point, because then the hedge fund has to close out, buy back, shares go up, giving the hedge fund a bigger profit. And what you've had this time is, on social media, retail investors have got in involved, piled in, and really driven the shares up very fast, very quickly. And I'd imagine some hedge funds have had to panic and buy it and close out at almost any price. Now, is this market manipulation? The Securities and Exchange Commission is looking into it. You cannot hunt in packs without necessarily getting involved in accusations of market manipulation. There's no law against what we've seen this week, but the SEC's having a look at it. Certainly, you've got to say, fair enough, retail investors have been smart and the hedge funds have mismanaged their risk and they've had their trousers pulled down as a result.
So you've got the private investors accumulating stock, then you've got these shorters needing to accumulate stock to pay off the shorts they've got. What's sort of in my mind, how can the shorters have borrowed more stock than is physically stock available? How is that possible?
Well, it's because you've got this guy with a stake, so with a physical stake in the company. So he's not going to sell. He's not going to lend to you. It's his stake in the company. So they've ended up, basically, that's the way in which it's happened. He's now got this stake and said, well, I'm not going to lend to anybody, thanks ever so much. So that's just tough. So that's what's created an even bigger squeeze than you would have done normally.
But ultimately, I mean, of course, I saw the one hedge fund, they said lost 100%, and it was about $13 billion they lost. So I don't know if that's true.
Melvin Capital, allegedly, but we'll have to find out.
So, but essentially, like I said, this the share price of this company now, it's super overvalued, isn't it? And it's an old economy stock. I mean, the original guy started taking a stake, apparently, in the company because he wanted them to go more online and be more of a competitor to Amazon. I don't know where that's going to happen now, but surely it's only going one way soon, the share price. Of course, maybe short term it could go a little bit more, but surely now it's going to go back down,
well,
isn't it?
Well, again, the challenge is for those people who've got involved is they're going to want, presumably, to lock in their profits at some stage.
So you have got
to sell to somebody. You've got to find a buyer. Mm. Now, everybody's going to be looking at this thinking, hang on a minute, these shares have been ramped up to the planet Zob by a liquidity short-driven short squeeze that may or may not have anything to do with the company's fundamentals. Mm. As you've just discussed, really, you've got to say that the market cap of $24 billion relative to its current financial proposition and $2.6 billion net asset value is very, very lofty. So again, to lock in your profit and be smart, you've got to find somebody who you might be thinking is dumb, and you're going to sell them to it. And there might be a chance that's not going to be so very easy. Equally, there may still be some hedge funds who've got positions to close, so they will be waiting in the wings, which might help. But yeah, it could be tricky. Now, I'm not saying what's happened is right or wrong, whether it's investing, trading, or gambling lies in the eye of the beholder. What I would say is that anybody who is involved, and on our platform we have seen some volume in some of these names, is all I would say is make sure that what you're doing fits with your particular own style, experience, and ultimately your strategy, time horizon, target returns, and appetite for risk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think because in the end, if this goes wrong, you're going to feel very sorry for yourself in more than one way, because you're going to potentially lose money if you're not careful. And sticking to what works for you and has worked for you, even if it means you miss out on something else, works out best in the end. And let's give a classic example. Mr. Neil Woodford, not a name that investors generally think of very fondly right now, mm-hmm. but they used to do for a very long time, because he was a very successful UK equity income fund manager. Mm-hmm. And he was really good at working out companies' cash flows, assessing companies' business models, what was strong and what enabled them to generate consistent dividend payments over a long, very long period of time. He then switched style completely to start investing in young growth startup companies. Yeah. Very different skill sets. And unfortunately, it didn't work. And Mr. Woodford's had a bucket full of stuff poured all over his head for it. But if you're an investor who's been doing that pouring, you've then got to look at yourself in the mirror if you've changed your style recently to pile in on some of these short squeezes, if you've previously been a patient, diligent income investor. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying you've got to know what works for you and where your strengths are. And if you're moving away from that to pile in because you're frightened of missing out, you've just got to be very, very careful, because your risk profile has gone up. And you need to be making sure that you're investing or trading here with money that you can afford to lose in case you find yourself on the other end of a trade like this, which, let's face it, could happen.
Yeah, the thing is, like I said, sort of, my nephew's 19, he's getting into sort of, you know, crypto and trading all this, and he seems to be getting all his research from TikTok, pretty much. And he said, he talked about GameStop, he said, is it too late to get into BlackBerry? I said, I have no idea. First of all, I don't really invest in US stocks, you know, and secondly, it's not the kind of thing I do, just chasing it. I can see why people who are less experienced would chase this. And sadly, like, well, you know, the story about is that this group of private investors has done one over on Wall Street, but there's probably a lot of private investors getting burnt on this now, who bought it up very high. They've chased the price up because, you know, it's gone up, 20 times since the start of the year now, GameStop. So there's probably a lot of private investors going to get burnt on this, you know, lose some money chasing
that
the price.
That would be my worry. And as I said, I initially think that this is a professional hit anyway. I think the big money's been made by other hedge funds picking off other hedge funds' positions.
Yeah.
But I think, yes, retail have got involved. And again, so long as they know the risks, that's fine. I don't sound like their dad or their granddad here. So, you know, I'm not telling them what to do. But I think, as you just said there, you don't do US stocks and you know what your circle of competence is. And I think any investor or trader needs to stick within their circle of competence. Now, there is no parallel between investing and gambling. But the most successful professional gamblers I know, and I know a couple because I like a bet on the horses myself, mm-hmm. they stick to one particular type of race.
Yeah.
I've got one mate who just sticks to 3-mile steeplechases, because he says, then I'm the person in Britain who probably knows as much about 3-mile steeplechases as anybody else. And that's my edge on the bookie.
Yeah.
And you've got to have an edge. And that's by specialising. So doing a bit of this and a bit of that, you're making it harder for yourself to have an edge. And I think you've got to stick, know what your circle of competence is, what your experience levels are, and stick with them. And it's hard to do when you can see other people making what looks like easy money. It is incredibly hard to do. But that's what creates the trouble, is that people piling it into things they don't necessarily understand and then don't know what to do if the asset starts going against them and the price starts going. And that's when real trouble begins.
Do you know what? I couldn't agree more. I mean, I've dabbled. When I first started, I started on bigger stocks and then I came down. And now for the last, I'd say, probably 6-7 years now, I've been on smaller microcap stocks, and I have a 9-point filter that I've gone through and evolved over time that makes sure I reduce the risk. For example, small caps are very important. They have plenty of cash, and you know, and I like tech, and so I'm into that side. But literally, I've stepped every now and again. I've stepped away from it accidentally from this filter, and mainly through emotion, maybe of chasing something, and it hasn't paid off well. But it teaches me a little lesson to get back to where you know, and you know, and so and absolutely, you've got to find a strategy you're comfortable with. And then hone that strategy, you know, until you get it. It's all about, I mean, it's a, the funny thing is, people think it's one of those things, trading or investing, that people think they can just jump into, do, and make a lot of money quickly. And it's not, you know, I wouldn't expect to do that in plumbing or bricklaying or, you know, it takes years and years to get good at it. And that's the thing, isn't it? It's quite complex. So you find a strategy and you hone it. That's what you do, isn't it, really? You know?
Yeah. And I think that's it's staying within your comfort zone, because when you go beyond that, is often when you do find things going wrong and things going against you, and then you feel doubly uncomfortable. One, because you're losing money, and two, because you deep down know that you possibly have done something you wouldn't have normally done, and you got a little bit overexcited. And it's human nature. It's incredibly hard to resist. But you know, in the end, sticking to your plan and if you're a day trader and that works for you, then fine. You probably think, well, why should I go and buy Diageo and just farm some dividends for the next 20 years? Mm. But you know, equally, if you're an income investor, you'll be sticking to income things. Income pairs with strong competitive positions, good balance sheets that can keep on churning up the dividends no matter what happens. And they're very different type of stocks and asset classes that you'll lean towards. And you'll have a very different holding time. You'll be owning and investing in stocks as an investor, and you'll be renting them and trading them as a trader. And that it's very, very different. You've just got to know what works best for you in terms of your temperament, but also your own financial circumstances, your pain threshold for loss, your ability to withstand loss, and what your target returns are, and the balance between them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's like I say, you know, a team of footballers. They've all got different styles. You've got to find the one you've got to find the right
blend. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, for years, I see people on Twitter, you know, doing quick trades all the time on technical things. And I wouldn't never, ever put money now into those companies. I think, well, that's not a company I can hold for 2-3 years. You know, that's what I want to do. It's probably more than that, if possible.
Yeah.
But you know, I can see their technical point that this could rally. For example, they'll jump into a stock. It's had a big fall off, for example, after 2-3 days, and it'll go for the bounce. I would never do that. I think, well, why do you want to go for the bounce? Why not go for a longer term sustained rise? But they're a trader, and that's what they do. So, you know, but it's all different styles.
I found the quote from Buffett I was looking for. Here we go. Your circle of competence and stick within it. Mm. The size of that circle is not very important. Knowing its boundaries, however, is absolutely vital.
Yeah. Excellent stuff. I do wonder, obviously he's a genius investor, but he's obviously a genius quote generator as well. And I'm thinking you get someone to write it for him, maybe, because he's got enough money. But the quotes he comes out with are phenomenal, you know. And the one that sticks by me quite a lot is that one about Olympic diving. You know, he said, investing, keep it simple. It's not like Olympic diving. You don't get points for difficulty, you know. And so, if you don't understand an investment in some way or business, investing, go away, because there's plenty of others there you can find and understand, you know. So,
exactly.
Yeah. Marvellous, Russ. Thanks for that. And
keep well.
Yeah, we'll speak next week.
I look forward to it.
Okay, it's time for the top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at 5, Veridici DX. At 4, Gene Drive. Veridici is up 1.85%, 82.5. Gene Drive up 40%, 78.5. Conduity, as in conduit. Conduity Capital. It's up 5.36%, 2.75. At 2, Abingdon Health, down 13% to 102. And Erasure Mining, after a big drop yesterday of 38%, is up 44.44% today, 26 pence. Okay, top 5 most read RNSs are as follows. At 5, Greatland Gold, further drilling results at Havirion. At 4, Gene Drive, distribution agreement with Beckman Coulter. At 3, a Vector Group collaboration agreement with Brooker. At 2, Supply Hapmi Capital, statutory audited accounts to the 31st December 2019. And at 1, Eurasia Mining, share price movement and update. Of course, biggest red today. And talking about why the director, no reason why the share price dipped, but one of the reasons was strategic advisor of the company sold shares, apparently. So check that list out at voxmarkets.co.uk. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.